across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
7:06 now across Wisconsin on this Tuesday, October 17th. Welcome back to Up North News Radio on this National Pasta Day, National Wear Something Gaudy Day, National Women in Military Service Day, and one especially for me, National Clean Your Virtual Desktop Day. Let's see if I can tell how many tabs do I have open right now. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 at the moment. I'm sure there's more that are reduced in some other place, but this might be a good day for some of us to look at some of those open tabs and say, hey, are those really necessary? Coming up this hour, Wisconsin pioneered the role of agricultural cooperatives. Perhaps it is time to go back to the future. We'll talk to an expert about the value of cooperatives to a local economy, and we'll explore what the greater economy might look like if we had more co-ops to help democratize the markets. Courtney Berner is our guest, along with Hans Breitenmoser. We were talking with Sam Davison in the last hour during our history break and music lesson, and I wanted to share one comment coming from one of our Racine area listeners who says in his text message, his or her text message, it's from Deanna in Lake Geneva. See, sometimes you can just read to the end of the message and see who sent it. Deanna in Lake Geneva writes, not a boomer, but I love the remake by Fall Out Boy. Reminds me of all the crud that's happened. Sums it up.
Sounds
pretty well.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I would go with that, Deanna. Yes. A lot of crud has happened in your lifetime and maybe it's just, again, the melody that Billy Joel was mocking himself. Maybe you need a song with modern lyrics, but I'm sure Fall Out Boy kind of amped up the volume a little bit, but maybe you just need an entirely different way to give that history lesson. I'm not sure, but you know, appreciate the input on that. We wanted to cover a few other topics that we haven't had a chance to unpack yet in terms of, you know, news headlines on the day. The state Senate and the state assembly are in session today. We'll go over some of the bills that they are considering as they are both in floor sessions later on at the state capitol. We'll talk about Supreme Court Justice Rebecca Bradley speaking at a far-right conference, but also something that caught our attention. It's mostly from Minnesota, but does impact some Wisconsin healthcare providers. Basically, a growing number of doctors say they've had it with clinics embracing chronic understaffing and putting profit margins over their medical missions, and they're unionizing. So it's most certainly worth a discussion. Discussions that I have been, you know, privy to knowing other people in the healthcare industries about the problems with understaffing, with allowing some of your best folks to be, you know, poached by other places that are understaffed and trying to compete for the best people out there. And as a result, the physicians in this case say that, you know, they need to make a statement somehow. Now, it was just the other day that thousands of healthcare workers for Kaiser Permanente, located out on the West Coast, reached an agreement that prevented further symbolic strikes or actual work stoppages. And the central issue there, again, was understaffing. And the concern that doctors have, that it gets them away from patient-centered care, because they can only see so many people that they're asked to see in the course of a day, and it becomes much more computer input of billing codes and things like that, rather than taking the time to sit with a patient, get the patient the care they need right away, as opposed to having them wait because a certain specialist isn't there, or they don't have enough nurses or techs or others to do the amount of procedures that they might have done in the past. It's a big step for doctors to unionize. It was something that many decades ago now, when it would come up, doctors would have been among the first to be against any kind of union activity. But this isn't the same economy that it was decades ago. So that you have everybody from auto workers to coffee shop baristas to now physicians saying that forming a union might be the only way to have a collective voice and insist on changes in the workplace. So we'll see if that happens with the doctors in Allina, who again are mostly in Minnesota, but also some are in western Wisconsin as well. And perhaps at some point, I know we mentioned it briefly with Dr. Kristen Lyerly, we may have another guest on at some point to talk about the kinds of things that can be done. I mean, because after all, demographics aren't in our favor. Again, more baby boomers retiring all the time. You've had Republicans for decades fighting against legalized immigration expansion and reform. And so there's only so many people that say, well, maybe I'll switch gears and go into a career in healthcare. But these are issues that are going to impact a lot of us in Wisconsin, especially, you know, around northern and rural parts of Wisconsin. So we'll continue to follow that for you. Let's take a break here. Then we'll get into what the legislature is talking about today. And we'll get the weatherology forecast and a quick look at sports as well. And then we'll talk about cooperatives in Wisconsin in our second half hour. This is Up North News Radio for a Tuesday. We'll be right back. Again, Billy Joel's album Stormfront hit number one this day in 1989, containing that hit. And of course, we didn't start the fires we were talking about in our first segment here. These temperatures around Wisconsin this morning, a lot of them with fog or freezing fog being reported. We're at 31 right now here on Lake Wissota, 32 in Madison. La Crosse is at 38. Wausau 33, Wisconsin Rapids down to 32. Green Bay's up a couple degrees to 40, but Hayward is down a degree from last hour and is now at 27 degrees. Let's bring on Jennifer Wachitsky from Weatherology to talk more about the chilly temperatures, getting this fog burned off, and what the forecast looks like for midweek. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, like you said, some areas looking at some fog here early this morning. Otherwise, we are expecting it to burn off overall here for today. We are expecting to see temperatures essentially pretty average by the afternoon hours. Looks like a sunny day today. Highs in the upper 50s to low 60s for most. A couple of warmer spots getting into the mid-60s around Amory and Richland Center, actually. Wednesday, a chance for some rain showers across the board. Cloudy skies, looks like mid to low 60s for most again. Upper 50s around west central Wisconsin as that stationary front starts to build in. A similar forecast with that stationary front on Thursday, chance for rain on Thursday for all, slightly cooler by just a few degrees, mid-50s to right around about 60. Then on Friday, kind of all over the place, slight chance for rain showers from Milwaukee over to Madison and also around Amory and Baldwin. Sunny skies expected around Richland Center, then cloudy from Oshkosh through central Wisconsin. Slight chance for rain coming in by Friday night for those areas that aren't expected to see it during the day. High temperatures, though, similar to Thursday, mid-50s to right around about 60. So temperature-wise, not too much movement overall for the middle and second part of the work week.
And you can get that weatherology forecast updated a couple times an hour throughout the day all across the Civic Media Radio Network. Jennifer, thanks very much. Have a great day.
Thanks, you too.
All right. Let's take a look at sports now at 7:17. And for us, that would start with the baseball playoffs. The Philadelphia Phillies are up 1-0 over the Arizona Diamondbacks in the National League Championship Series. Bryce Harper hit a home run on his 31st birthday. The final score was 5-3. Game two is tonight in Philly. In the American League, the Texas Rangers have defeated the Houston Astros in Houston twice now. And so they take a 2-0 lead back to Arlington, Texas for game three of that series. And that will take place tomorrow. Badger quarterback Tanner Mordecai is out indefinitely. He did break his throwing hand in Saturday's loss at Iowa when he hit it on an Iowa player's helmet. The coach there, Luke Fickell, did not set any kind of timetable for a possible return. The Badger women's hockey team continues to be ranked best in the nation, a 6-0 record. They will play in Madison this coming weekend against Minnesota State. The men's hockey team is 3-1 with two games to go before opening up Big Ten Conference play. Their only loss was last Saturday at 7th-ranked North Dakota. This weekend, they'll be at 17th-ranked Michigan Tech. All right, I mentioned that the Wisconsin legislature is back in session here and that there are essentially two sessions going on right now. There's the regular fall legislative session, and then there's a special session called by Governor Tony Evers to address some items that either weren't taken care of in the state budget bill or they were, but not nearly to everyone's satisfaction. And so the governor called a special session back in August. He called it for now, saying, come on in, let's talk about these issues, especially the Child Care Counts program, and getting that funded properly so that these child care providers don't go out of business. And Republicans in the legislature said no. They scrapped the bill. They said, what you really need is a tax cut that's geared toward the higher incomes. And Governor Evers responded yesterday by noting that he's going to allocate $170 million in still unspent pandemic relief funds to keep the Child Care Counts program going until at least early 2025. That program has helped more than 4,000 child care providers keep their doors open since 2020. Those providers take care of 22,000 workers and 113,000 children. And again, it was funded entirely with federal pandemic relief funds. But then with that money set to run out come January, the governor said, hey, we have this surplus, which was confirmed yesterday to be $7 billion. We can certainly use some of that to keep our workforce from being depleted as people have to stay home because they don't have childcare options. You shouldn't face a tighter budget for childcare for having two people in the workforce. And so one parent often has to stay home instead. And we could do better for a workforce that is desperate for good people in many of these jobs. Well, the Senate said no. Senate Republicans, and they will be talking about that and much more today when they're in session. I mean, they have a laundry list of bills that they're going to be going through. There's one that micromanages the definition of abortion. There's one that removes the school district penalty box, as we've been calling it, that says that if a school district goes to referendum and the referendum fails, then for 3 years, they would not be able to get an increase in the bare minimum amount of state aid. I mean, it was a very punitive bill. And as a result, there are school districts throughout the state this year that are facing getting less state aid than last year, again, with a $7 billion surplus. And so this bill looks to be a bipartisan bill, the kind that would pass. Now, as I'm looking at the Senate calendar for today, and I didn't count it up, there's looks to be about 50 bills that they're taking up today. And this gets to a beef that I had when I was serving in the legislature about 15 years ago. And it's as true today as it was then. Our legislators get a salary of a little more than $50,000 a year. It's a full-time salary, and they are classified as full-time employees. And so they are expected, in all of their working hours, 365 days a year, that their focus would be on their full-time job of being a state legislator. But far, far too often, there are these immense gaps between the times when work gets done. And then you see a session calendar like this one, where a legislator will be sitting there, and I guarantee you, almost every legislator at some point today is going to be looking at this calendar and saying, I would like to know more about this bill. I would like to know about, you know, Senate Bill 85, authorizing email for notice of public inland lake protection and rehabilitation district board business. I would like to know more about Senate Bill 54, the amount of allowable cash withdrawal from a bingo account for the purpose of paying cash prizes. Why are we doing that? Is it a good idea or a bad idea, the language that's in the bill? Now, some would say that's why we have a committee system. These bills all go to committees and people take testimony and then we put it out there. And by and large, I mean, the concept is true. That if things go through committee and if legislators do their due diligence in committee, then what, the Senate is and the Assembly are just supposed to be rubber stamps? It seems to me that if you're going to have a legislature, then rather than saying everything that comes out of committee is pretty much ready to go as is, just trust us, just pass the bill. I mean, what are we paying them to be in session for? Let's just let the, you know, 5 to 7 members of a legislative committee determine everything that happens in that area, and all the other legislators can't question it. It's just really tough today if I'm looking at, let's say, here's Senate Bill 440, creation of a cremation permit application form. Assembly Bill 105, operation of an all-terrain vehicle or utility terrain vehicle owned by an electric cooperative on a highway. You know, some of these things are indeed just caretaker legislation, things that were maybe oversights, maybe cleaning up a definition, something like that. But when I see Senate Bill 416, grants to counties for veteran services, well, what do we mean by that? Are these good grants for veteran services? Is this a way for, you know, something shifty to happen in veterans' offices or in county offices some places? And how can you possibly expect legislators to operate this way when they're getting a salary as a full-time employee? That instead of jamming all this together for a few session days in October and jamming it all together for a few session days in, you know, April and May and maybe early June, that maybe you would meet more frequently with fewer bills and really discuss them. And if you really discuss bills, if you really discussed ideas with each other instead of talking at each other, like we see Republicans and Democrats do now, maybe there on the floor of the Senate or on the floor of the Assembly, you could find that common ground that helps solve some of these big problems. Is it really the case that to help child care centers, the answer is for the governor to find emergency funding someplace? Or is it really the answer to put $0 toward it, as some Republicans want? Is that what every Republican legislator really thinks, is to tell all these childcare providers, you should just go ahead and go out of business? I'd like to think the answer is somewhere in the middle. It would be for you and me if we were sitting in a room and we were tasked with that. Why can't we still expect that from our state legislators? I mean, and that's just the Senate. Over in the Assembly today, everybody knows the one big bill that they're doing is about the American Family Field deal for some public funding to accompany the Brewers' funding for future repairs and renovations. Everybody's talked about that. But there are plenty of other things about, you know, a bill that designs the healthcare coverage plans for public safety employees, and there's a case management system for tracking misconduct within the Wisconsin National Guard. Should these things really just be done willy-nilly, or should we get what we're paying our legislators to do? And I can say this as somebody who's been in there, who's been on a committee, who's chaired a committee, who knows that it is hard work during those times when you're dedicated to doing that work. It's not the fault of any particular legislator, but it's the way that they have this system set up right now in terms of committees and floor debates that really does lend itself to more partisan sniping than is necessary. A lot of these bills do pass on bipartisan votes, But in a lot of cases, that legislator's thinking, well, okay, I'll go along with this based on what I'm reading, but it sure would be nice to learn a bit more about it and maybe actually talk about these things on the floor of the legislature. We'll take a break here. Hans Breitenmoser will come visit with us, bring along a guest, Courtney Berner, to talk about Wisconsin cooperatives, their past, and perhaps their future. We'll be back. You're up north. Alan Jackson turns 65 years old today as we welcome in Hans Breitenmoser. Usually have men every couple of weeks or so. And he's a dairy farmer up in the Merrill area. And we find different topics in the area of agriculture, the rural economy, state and local politics as well, as a former county board member. And this time around, we're going to be talking about cooperatives. Hans, we haven't talked for a couple of weeks because of my vacation in the middle here. So how are you? How have you been?
Pretty good. How have you been, Pat? How was your vacation?
It was wonderful. It was so great to be out west and out there for the potato harvest, where you could watch a lot of activity going on there. What's been keeping you busy on the farm up there?
Well, we got some more manure hauled, and we got a bunch of winter rye planted. We still have a whole bunch of corn to combine, and like to make some hay yet and combine some beans. So we've got plenty to do. It's kind of ironically, we're trying to get things done between rain showers, which was certainly not an issue over the entirety of the summer, but now it sort of is. So
how crazy is that? That has been the thing. You know, even for something as basic as mowing the lawn, is like, yep, we used to be able to not even have to do it, or you could do it on demand, and now it's like, now we're working around the rain. But you know, such mm-hmm. as it is. Hey, part of the reason Wisconsin has the agriculture history that it does is because of cooperatives. And so as we get set to welcome in Courtney Berner to the program, this was the choice of this topic was spurred by a typical calendar item. I think it was National Cooperative Week or Month or something like that. And I guess that got you to thinking. Tell me a bit why.
Yeah, well, October is Cooperative Month. And I just thought that co-ops are one of those interesting forms of business that a lot of people don't know about, don't understand, but have an impact on I would say just about everybody's life. And certainly in agriculture, we are familiar with co-ops because that's kind of the form of business that we do business with oftentimes. Our feed cooperatives and our livestock cooperatives and our dairy processing cooperatives are just so ingrained in ag culture in Wisconsin and I think the United States. But I think Wisconsin has a pretty interesting history on cooperatives. And so it got me thinking about, taking this opportunity to highlight October being co-op month and bringing somebody in who understands the moving parts better than I do and maybe understands a little bit of the history. Because I think, it's important because it's just so impactful in how we do business. And I think if people understood more about cooperatives and how they actually work, that they're owned by the people who use them, I think people would be able to gain an appreciation for sort of how democratic they are in terms of, commerce. The owning the means of the production and the processing and so forth has a big impact in ag, but it's like I said, it has a lot of an impact in other areas as well. Electric co-ops that were very popular back in the day helped get this state electrified is just one example. But I think Courtney can do a lot better job than I can of explaining.
I don't know. You're doing a great job. Just keep going.
There you go. Well, let's bring in Courtney Berner. She's the executive director of the University of Wisconsin Center for Cooperatives. Courtney, good morning. Thank you for being here.
Morning. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, Hans got started, but I'm gonna just roll that back a little bit because there are more than one or two people out there saying that they've heard of cooperatives. They're familiar with the word, the name, but when it really gets down to what is a cooperative, and especially in its historical, legacy here in Wisconsin, how do you tell that? Pick on any city kid like me. What's a cooperative?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's funny. I was presenting to a group of ag business majors at UW-Madison yesterday, and I asked them that same question. I'm like, what do you know about co-ops? Tell me what you know. What co-ops have you interacted with? So essentially, we think of a cooperative as a business or an enterprise that's owned, used, and controlled by the people who use it. So that shows up. Hans has done a great job of talking about how that shows up in the agricultural economy for farmers. But we have co-ops across the economy. So we've got consumer-owned co-ops, food co-ops, REI, credit unions are actually financial services cooperatives. So the people who have deposits and accounts within the credit union are members. You can have worker-owned cooperatives here in Madison. We have a coffee roasting company, a cab company, an engineering firm. They're all owned by the people who work. They're all owned by the people who work there. There's purchasing co-ops. So Ace Hardware, you may have an Ace Hardware in your community. That's actually part of a purchasing co-op where small business owners amass their purchasing power. So really, it's a really flexible model that, again, we see across the economy. Here in Wisconsin, there's a really strong history of co-ops in ag and in rural communities. But it can be applied in a lot of ways. And one of the things that makes them really different from other forms of enterprise, again, is that instead of being owned by investors and existing to generate, you know, returns for those investors, they literally exist for their members to meet the needs of members. You often see cooperatives emerge in places and times where there's a collective need, whether it's for electricity, access to dairy markets, living wage jobs, certain types of groceries, housing cooperatives, childcare cooperatives are getting a lot of attention right now. No surprise. A lot of people are struggling to find childcare and housing. So that's a business, but it really, again, exists to meet the needs of the people who come together to form that business.
Let me be just self-serving for just a second here to note that Up North News is owned by Courier Newsroom, a separate entity from Civic Media. And then Courier Newsroom is owned by a parent company called Good Information that is set up as what's called a public benefit corporation. Mm-hmm. And the way it's described is, hey, we're a corporation. We're not a nonprofit. We're here to make a profit. But by calling ourselves a public benefit corporation, we are specifically saying any profit is not designed to enrich our investors or shareholders. It is designed to be plowed back in to, you know, the work that the company does. Mm-hmm. In other words, it gets past this whole notion that has been so prominent for the past 30, 40 years, this fiduciary duty to shareholders, that it somehow absolves companies of blame for, you know, price hikes or working conditions or whatever, you know, outsourcing, because, well, we've got to put the shareholders first. It's what's good for the shareholders. The cooperative model seems to be, you know, the natural answer to something that is much more about mission than margin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a saying, I don't know who says this, I'd be the only one who's still saying this, but the idea of cooperatives, the idea is so old that it's new. Investor-owned firms, that model has generated a lot of wealth for a lot of people, but it is fundamentally different. You make different decisions as a business if your main reason for being is to generate a return for shareholders. It just impacts strategy, decision-making, all those things. And when you exist for public benefit, such as the example you're giving, or when you exist to meet the needs of members, and I just talked about some of the ways in which cooperatives are different, the different types of members they have, the different parts of the economy they might show up in. There's a set of seven cooperative principles that all cooperatives around the world adhere to. Some parts of the co-op community have added additional ones, but those seven core principles, in addition to one principle about, you know, member economic participation, democratic member control, there's also a principle about care for community. And so this idea that we are a business that meets needs of members, but also the broader community, does really just shift how these co-op businesses operate, whether it's how they choose to pay, you know, what milk prices they're paying to dairy farmers, what they're charging people that are buying their it really does just shift the whole orientation and can be a really powerful model for changing people's lives and meeting social, shared social, economic, cultural needs.
Hey, Hans, what I'm hearing here, I'm sure you've heard this a million times, not about cooperatives necessarily, but I'm hearing, oh my gosh, it's socialism. they've seized the means of production, as you said. But Hans, the difference being, this isn't government seizing the means of production. These are people working amongst themselves and for themselves, right, Hans?
Oh, absolutely. And I think, again, if you look back at the kind of the early history of co-ops, some of the folks who were worried about the impact that cooperatives would have, they did cry socialism. But of course, that's nonsense. What this means of doing commerce does is it keeps these dollars revolving back into the hands of the folks that actually have skin in the game. And so it does help a great deal in terms of one of the things that you and I have talked about in the past is just the extraction that we see in rural America. Dollars leaving our localities and going to Wall Street. Well, if those dollars can stay and bounce around locally, they have a greater impact and they do grow. So when we talk about how the money that's been created for shareholders over the years, if you take that and say, man, if those dollars were put back into the system, how would that system look? So it has this model definitely has an impact in rural America with regard to all the things that make rural America function. You know, when we talk about a tax base and so forth, roads and schools and so on, it's all about keeping those dollars here, bouncing around versus having that extraction component.
So Courtney,
and those businesses are, I'll just add, those businesses are less likely to leave too. These are businesses that are embedded in their local communities. So in addition to the really important benefits Hans just mentioned, they stay. You know, these aren't jobs that are leaving because it's cheaper to do the work elsewhere. They're truly embedded in the communities.
Absolutely. In the decision-making process, you know, again, what my dad was on a local cooperative board for many years, and that was just sort of part of the benefit, right? When the people that are sitting around the table making the decisions on the business are entrenched in the community, it does matter. It obviously speaks to what decisions are made around that table. Now, one of the things that in ag that we've seen is that co-ops have gotten bigger and bigger, and part of that is just sort of the natural progression of things. But I think that one of the things that concerns me on that is how do we maintain the economics of the local co-op so that we can still, continue to have that local control is one mm-hmm. of the things that I see a trend in co-ops. But the basic model of it is still, I think, superior to the just sort of the extraction that we've seen with other businesses.
Sure, because you've got people saying, well, wait, is this still, capitalism? Well, yes, it most certainly is. There's still competition, but there it has always been a place for collective bargaining, in capitalism, and the same goes for other forms of collective and cooperative work. So, Courtney, when I go to the website, which is UWCC for UW Center for Cooperatives, UWCC.wisc.edu, the thing I see up in the top banner there is start a co-op. So for folks thinking, oh, co-ops are some relic of a bygone era, co-ops are something people could get more information about for a particular sector of the economy in their hometown?
Absolutely. So actually, I joined the center as a cooperative development specialist in 2011. And so I helped people around the state start new cooperatives in a variety of industries. And we have three people on our team right now who are co-op development specialists. And so if you call our center, if you contact our center, there's a need in your community and you think it might make sense to try to meet that need collectively through a co-op, give us a call, shoot us an email. We serve the whole state. We're located at the UW-Madison office, but we're part of Extension and we serve the whole state. So that's a big part of our work right now is helping people who want to create new co-ops do so or convert businesses. One of our sort of growing areas of work is, business owners who want to retire or exit may not have an exit plan, a succession plan. We are supporting some really cool rural businesses and supporting those owners and selling the businesses to their employees and turning them into worker co-ops, keeping those jobs, services, tax-based businesses in those rural communities. So if you're a business owner and you don't think this has anything to do with you, I'm here to tell you that there is, that you can call us.
That is fascinating. That is a really great spin on something that we've heard before about people not sure what to do when it comes time to retire. So we've learned a lot in just a few minutes here. Courtney Berner, Executive Director of the University of Wisconsin Center for Cooperatives. Thank you very much. It was great to visit with you.
Yeah, thanks so much, Pat. Thanks,
yep. Hans, so good to talk to you as well. Have a great week. We'll talk to you again soon.
You bet. Thank you.
All right. Ciao. Have a great day, you guys. Talk to you later. When we come back, Chad Holmes will tell us what's happening on Bull Falls Radio in Wausau. Right after this, you're up north. Chad Holmes is going to be coming along next on Bull Falls Radio up in Wausau. Plenty of other shows across the Civic Media Radio Network. To learn more, go to civicmedia.us. Look for the stations, look for the shows, look for ways to listen online as a podcast or through the Civic Media app, where you can catch Chad as I do through the app. And I'm on his show on Thursdays as well, and he joins us. And it's so funny that I lost track of the time as we were chatting during the commercial break here, because that's exactly what happened last Thursday when I'm on with Chad. And I'm just, you know, going on and on and on about something, and suddenly I hear Chad going, "Thanks, Pat. We'll be back." It's just like, oh, yeah, those clocks are supposed to be important. I should really look at those more often.
Well, I tell you, I mean, for Pat Kreitlow, we should have floating clocks. That's number one. You know, number one, Pat Kreitlow, floating clocks, so we can just as long as we need to go.
Sure, sure. Or I could.
Can you hear me okay?
I feel like there's a little delay and you're a little muffled, but, you know, you're there. And that's the important thing here is that he's in the
break it up on me as well.
Okay. you if you want to disconnect and hop back in, we can give it a try here. Or do you want to power through it?
Let's try to go through here.
Well, okay. Here, I'll just throw you a nice open-ended softball and you tell me what's happening in the Wausau area that you have been talking about. What are one or two of the big topics on Bull Falls Radio this week?
Well, yesterday I had the mayor come on, and it was always interesting to talk to her because right now it's interesting. We got a significant, as I mentioned, you just coming off in the break, that we're right across from some significant construction here at the old Wausau Center Mall site. And we've had over the last, 6 weeks or so, some controversy with Terrence Wall. As I learned more about him from you than anybody else, because I didn't realize this guy was a political figure previously. But him and the city have had some conflict recently. And just last week, the city decided after some study, they would give him an extension in order to start the process of what's called the Foundry on Third, which is mixed use of both residential apartments and also some business. But Terry Wall continues to rip on members of the council. And it's very difficult for a city to have trust right now with a person that you are trusting to help put up a major, significant building project. And it feels to me, and again, it's a situation for me where it feels like Mr. Wall, for some reason, is trying to find maybe a way out of this. The city has given him the extension. They have put in some parts of their deal to make sure that they're covered. But it's very disconcerting because this was a project that was supposed to be started September 1st, but Mr. Wall had all these excuses why he couldn't do it, you know, from cost to, you know, to the supply chain and everything else. And somehow, you know, he said, well, somehow it's the city's fault. Well, it's not the city's fault. He had a deal made. And now we have this going on, and I'm very, you know, it's something to keep an eye on because this is a major project here downtown. It's important to every business downtown. It's important to the community, and it's something that we keep an eye on. And this man that's using his politics again instead of just, you know, being what he's supposed to be in this situation, a partner within a construction for a city, and yet he's sending out these notes yakking about how, you know, we have an oncoming recession and blah, 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 political crap. And it really, really, really bugs me to no end.
And let's talk about the importance of downtown development this way. In Chippewa Falls, we're very fortunate that we have a healthy downtown. There are very few vacant storefronts, and the city is essentially getting its next business district, a festival foods, grocery store, a Quick Trip, a Culver's, a hotel, all going up along Highway 29. And that's all fine and good, but it doesn't matter how your development is on the freeways and on the periphery. If people come into town and they see empty lots or, you know, vacant storefronts and everything, and so you need to do that right. Because a downtown that is not developed, that's not developed well, that's something that can undo a lot of other goodwill that, you know, the city and the business community might be doing.
I'm going to flip my computer around for you and give you a piece of, give you a site, which is right outside a window.
Chad is now turning his computer around so I can see out there.
Part of the construction that's going on right outside. This is this is actually being worked on, but even down a half a block or so is the T-Wall Foundry and Third, which is the actual site of the former mall. But we're fortunate in this area that our downtown is vibrant. We have a lot of great businesses right down here where we're now located downtown. But this is a and the aspect of having new apartments as well. Housing right now is a major issue in our community, not just here in Wausau, but the general central Wisconsin area. And we have, I think, 120 units being part of this construction right downtown, in addition to the business aspect. So, again, it's just so often nowadays, and I hope this changes at some point where somebody's political beliefs get into areas where they really shouldn't be. And Wall is bringing out his own political beliefs in these comments he's making, and it's disconcerting. We need to, everybody has their right to their political beliefs, but in using it in a business aspect like this, I think is just off the mark.
We haven't had Mayor Katie Rosenberg on this show for a while here, and so I think it's interesting. I'm betting that she brought it up yesterday. I certainly saw it in a social media post. The people that see her last name and assume that Katie Rosenberg is Jewish. She is not, but that does not stop her from getting a lot of attention, positive and negative, that is really ratcheting up because of the issues in the Middle East.
Absolutely. And I mean, this is not something new, because I think you may have heard in the last, it has no meaning half the time anymore. But in the last year, there was an incident here in Wausau where there was folks that were putting out anti-Semitic flyers at one of the synagogues here in Wausau. And the mayor was very much active in that. And she had mentioned the same thing, that there's this thought that, that she's a member of the Jewish faith. But you're exactly right. But she's been very strong in this area. And unfortunately, I mean, when you say this, the recent news headlines, it's been there for the last year. And it's been there for the last number of years in different areas around the country. Again, it is just incredibly disconcerting where folks are looking for excuses to see the differences, when instead of looking at the humanity of all of us. And it's, again, something that it makes you shake your head, and you need people that are true leaders. And unfortunately, in this community, we do have a leader that is willing to speak out on these issues and be a strong presence for the side of good in our community.
I don't think anybody captures that, the good in humanity from all faiths, from all backgrounds, than Katie Rosenberg does. Folks are very fortunate to have her in the mayor's chair there. We are very fortunate to have Chad Holmes in that chair there on Bull Falls Radio from 8 to 10 on weekday mornings. Thanks so much for the visit. We'll get into all the high school sports you're covering next time around. I think that's still going to keep you busy when we talk next week. So have a great week. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you, Pat.
All right. And tomorrow on this program, we'll talk more about a new lawsuit aimed at ending the voucher school program that's devouring so much of our public school funds. Have a great Tuesday. We'll see you tomorrow.